Good day, good night, and welcome to the All Elite Review Show. AEW Full Gear just finished with Omega left laying on piles of wood. But first of all, how you doing tonight, Jason?
I'm doing quite well, and we just finished our first AEW pay-per-view post AEW Dynamite launching, and all in all, I thought production-wise looked great, but, we'll get into it. But this was, I think, a good pay-per-view, a good venture. Maybe not a great pay-per-view, but a good start in the first pay-per-view post-TV launching.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. Of course, this show coming from Baltimore, Farm Arena, it was, for me, a bit dampened by the reaction of the crowd all night long. Of course, when the crowd reacted big during the main event, it was fine. During other matches in the Cody, of course, in Jericho match, the crowd was into it. But throughout the night, I had a feeling that crickets were in place of the crowd, and that left me a bit, like, confused. I was like, this is a great show happening, like, during the Riho and Emi Sakura match. I was like, where is the crowd?
Yeah, I think that also has to do with how their women's division's been presented. Like, there's been nice matches, and there's some talent that they've developed and they've done, and like Riho's your champion, and there's been some development of the Joshi girls that are on the show. But yeah, like, maybe there's not enough backstory for people right now. Like, they need some video packages to why the audience should care about like a Riho or an Emi Sakurai or what have you. Like, yes, they're great wrestlers, but being a great wrestler in this day and age, or in general, just doesn't cut it. There needs to be a story and a reason to care.
I absolutely agree. And we'll see when we talk about the actual pay-per-view here, if there was a lot of crowd reaction that surprised us. And down the road, maybe the crowd will be more into the women's matches. But let's start and look at this pay-per-view, which actually had a pre-show match, a countdown of an hour with half an hour of the countdown show. And then we had the Dr. Britt Baker versus Bea Priestley, which was an interesting matchup. Britt Baker did have the flu. Cody tweeted earlier today she was battling the flu but was able to go through her match. But the true, I wouldn't say memorable, because I don't know how memorable it is, but it might be for the wrong reason. Awesome Kong and Brandi Rhodes made their way to the ring after the end of the match and decided to cut some hair off of Bea Priestley's head.
Yeah, I guess that's a piece of their trophy for whatever they're doing. I think there still needs to be some explanation. Like, we understand that Brandi's using Kong to pretty much, I guess, get herself to have an AEW Women's Championship match and run the women's division as being the powerful figurehead on screen as well as behind the scenes. But yeah, that was a bit weird. Like, I didn't get to see the match. I only saw this end angle of Bea Priestley getting her hair knifed off her head. Not even cut, just knifed. So that was a bit interesting. I guess this is fine, but I think we need still a little bit more reasoning why Kong and Brandi are going for, you know, hair as trophies.
Or maybe they want to do a spell or something and they need the witchcraft. They need
hair. It feels like that may be something. They need like a piece of everyone in the women's division's identity that they need. I don't know what have you.
To create one for Brandi. I don't know. It was something. And then, of course, we had the good old JR coming out in entrance and a two-man crew for the pay-per-view tonight. Tony Schiavone doing the Georgia Misery Game. Georgia was leading last time I checked. It's probably over by now, and Georgia probably won. But Georgia Misery in the NCAA college football. That's why Tony Schiavone was not present tonight. But just to talk about JR and Excalibur for a second, JR had a little bit of a tongue-twisted episode a couple of times, but who am I to talk? It happens to me once every 20 minutes, so that's all good. But for JR and Excalibur, I have to say I really enjoyed Excalibur all night long during this pay-per-view.
I think Excalibur has definitely proven himself to be the best, or one of the best broadcasters right now. Like, he tells stories, he calls the moves as their names are. He's been such a vital asset to the broadcast team. And like, as good as JR has been, especially, you know, in big angle moments or calling the big match, and as well, Tony Schiavone's added a nice touch, you know, having those nostalgia pieces are there. You need someone like Excalibur that fits in the current mode of professional wrestling today. And I think he's blended a nice touch. And, you know, two-man booths tonight are always better than anything with a three-man booth. As much as I have enjoyed the three-man booth with Tony, JR, and Excalibur, I think a two-man booth always works better. And those two just have really started to develop their chemistry the past couple of weeks right now on AEW, Dynamite, and then tonight just having it with the two of them. They were solid all night long.
They were. We did actually have Taz as well doing some commentary for the Britt Baker match in the buy-in or the pre-show, which was interesting to have with Golden Boy Taz doing some commentary. But let's talk about the opening match of this pay-per-view, Young Bucks versus Pride and Powerful, Santana and Ortiz. Let's have a little conversation about gears and the baseball-inspired gear of Santana and Ortiz. Kind of liked it. It was anything but Orioles color, which works. You're the Hills. You don't want to represent the local team. And I really enjoyed their gear with their respective area code on their back, the 787 and 212. Yeah, I've got pros. And in different area codes, you would say, but I loved that gear.
I mean, their gear is definitely unique. You know, as guys that are representing, you know, that the Bronx area of New York, they're representing their Puerto Rican heritage full on. And I thought, you know, of anyone, I don't know if you watched the countdown special before for AEW's pay-per-view here at Full Gear. I thought the biggest breakthrough stars on that countdown were Pride and Powerful, Santana and Ortiz. And I thought if you give these guys more time to talk, like, they can really make you believe in them as legit badasses. And tonight, I think they got to, you know, they were the right match to start with the Young Bucks. And honestly, I thought they set the tone really high for a high impact, good back and forth tag match. And, you know, really continue to solidify how deep and talented this tag division is in AEW.
Yeah, because this was one of two great tag team match in this pay-per-view. The other one, of course, the triple threat for the title, or three-way dance, you should say, for the tag team title later on. But I really enjoyed a few spots, of course, in this one. It's a Young Bucks match, so you're going to have a lot of high spots. And a few of them were fascinating. The Camel Clutch Boston Crab by Pride and Powerful. That was pretty good. I think it was Nick with the double suplex, but twice. So the double suplex. So the two sugars, two cream suplex. That was pretty damn impressive as well. One of the few high spots that really got my attention during this one.
Well, and as well, before as the match just got underway, before we noticed that they cut to the audience and the Rock and Roll Express was there ringside, and they added the stipulation that if Santana and Ortiz do anything to attack the Rock and Roll Express, they'll be heavily fined. And you knew that would somehow play, the Rock and Roll Express would play into this match at some point. As you know, we saw a spot where Santana threw I believe it was Nick Jackson in on top of the Rock and Roll Express. You know, the Rock and Roll Express got heated up, and I find it funny how they were Robert Gibson was sitting out there in his AEW jacket, and they were both wearing their WWE Hall of Fame rings on. I thought that was pretty interesting. But you know, like, the biggest thing for me was the storytelling by Nick Jackson. Now, he went for a big kick on Ortiz, who was laid up against the ring post, sitting on the apron, and Ortiz moved just as Jackson delivered the kick and really hurt his leg. And that was the story, that there was the Young Bucks were down to one man, Nick Jackson was down to one leg. And then right after that happened, Ortiz then mugged at the camera and said, "I'm a genius." And I thought that was pretty funny. But I mean, I like the thing about these tag matches, I like is we know these teams' finishes and how they find creative and innovative ways to counter the finish. So we have to keep building up to it. I thought was fantastic.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because there's a few times during the entire pay-per-view where it's only been since October 4th, right? The debut of AEW Dynamite. But they did train their audience in a certain way. And it goes all the way to the pack match, right? Remember when we saw that finish against Trent last Wednesday? And we're like, why did he do the brutalizer there when he just did the arrow? When we didn't understand. Well, it was to set up one spot during the Hangman Page match. So there's a lot of this that it actually paid off tonight. And some of those were during the Young Bucks match you mentioned. The Pride and Powerful, how they find ways to insert that cutter, to find ways to get your super kick when you don't expect it. And I really enjoyed, I have to say, you mentioned the Rock and Roll Express. And of course, at the finish of the match, Pride and Powerful made to look very, very good, shined a lot during this match, and that's probably going to lead to eventually being a number one contender for Pride and Powerful. You don't beat the Young Bucks clean and not get a title shot, but of course, a beatdown after, Sammy Guevara comes out, Rock and Roll Express comes in, and officially, Ricky Morton becomes the oldest man ever to pull off a Canadian Destroyer.
Well, he's already, Ricky Morton has hit a Canadian Destroyer already, but I mean, it's the first time, I guess, a wide variety of the audience have seen it. I believe he hit it on, I think, Santana back on the WrestleMania GCW show as well. Maybe even, I think, one of the NWA shows this year. But I mean, it's crazy that the Rock and Roll Express are, you know, two sets of legit grandfathers, and they can still work and have pretty solid tag matches still, which is amazing. But I would figure with a clean finish as the Santana and Ortiz Pride and Powerful hit their street sweeper finish on the Young Bucks, you would think, yes, they are getting a tag title shot. But then this angle post-match probably sets up a match on Dynamite, as we are in Nashville this Wednesday, as the Rock and Roll Express will take on Pride and Powerful. You would maybe think that. Yeah. Nothing's been officially announced, but that's the direction you seem that we are going for. But definitely Pride and Powerful now come out as probably the number one contenders for the AWE Tag Team Championships.
And
AEW, excuse me.
Yeah, and to talk a little bit about theory also, you had the clean win for Pride and Powerful, making them look good. And then there would be down and the shine back on the Young Bucks with the whole Rock and Roll Express involvement at the end, so they got their heat back. So at least the Young Bucks don't come out of this as losers also. So of course you're gonna have the ramification. I wouldn't be surprised if next Wednesday Nick still sells that that tibia or that shin. But I do like where they're going, keeping the Young Bucks strong, but still using the pillars of this company: Cody, the Elite, Omega, Young Bucks, Hangman Page also, but in a different way, to put the shine on other people.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was, I guess, okay if you're set, like, you better set up a match with Pride and Powerful versus the Rock and Roll Express. But I didn't think you needed to have, like, the Young Bucks look strong right after the match. Like, they did the job clean. I think it's the Young Bucks have been a very unselfish team here since the launch of AEW, like, getting teams now, like Pride and Powerful and Private Party over. But I don't think you needed to do that. I think Pride and Powerful have their moment and establish that this is a strong force that's really hit the AEW tag division with a huge win like this. I don't know if you needed to do that right away.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. You could have let it breathe a bit more. And we'll talk about it later when we go to the Cody and the angle at the end of that match, which is another one that people thought maybe you could let breathe a bit more. We'll see. An angle that has taking a long breath, as Lisa is the Pack versus Hangman Page match. This was scheduled to happen a long time ago, and finally, we got this match. We got some cowboy shit on our screen, Jason.
Yeah, you know, this was, once again, one of the bigger undercard matches of the singles division here in AEW. Pac versus Hangman Adam Page. And you know, over the weekend that they have they tweeted out finally like the rankings of contenders for the AEW championship, and Pac was right now pretty much the number two contender going into this match, behind obviously Cody, who was wrestling for the championship this evening. But yeah, this was you know, a good match between these two. These two obviously have solid chemistry, and you keep teasing the finishes. And every time Pac went for that big corkscrew twister press move off the top rope, you know, he never really got to it. So, you know, that shows that that move may not always connect for Pac when he's here in AEW, as it is a high risk move, but it was setting up, how do you get to the buckshot lariat? And eventually the Hangman gets a big win back.
He gets his big win back with the Deadeye. And I did like the way they set up the Deadeye with before the right forearm shot, and then the lariat, the Deadeye. And then we find ourselves with Hangman Page winning. And I love the long storyline here of a year ago. Hangman Page, I think it was it during All In? It must have been during the All In pay-per-view, right? Where Hangman Page, I believe, lost to Pac. And this whole storyline of a year later getting better, seeing him train on social media and stuff like that over the last year for Hangman Page, and getting the job done tonight for the Hangman, and finally getting the success and the heat. And it's been only since October 4th, right, Dynamite? And we've already seen it kind of like a story arc for Hangman Page, where he was the fourth guy in, the third guy in, into tag team matches just a few weeks ago, losing and then slowly getting his rhythm all the way to beating Pac tonight, the bastard.
Yeah, Page has obviously been one of the top prospects right now in professional wrestling, and you can see glimpses of why he's probably going to be a top babyface and a future champion of AEW down the road, but still need to work out some kinks, I guess, on him, or keep building him up, because he was really at the cusp of the breakthrough run towards the end of his time in Ring of Honor about a year ago's time right now. And, you know, he had that time off. You're building him up here, gets that win over Pac, and I don't know where he will go from here. I think Wednesday we'll see a fresh direction for a lot of on talent on this promotion, and Page will definitely be one of them.
He will be one of them, and his merch that literally says cowboy shit on it, it is going to sell out if it's not already. And then something that I've been caught by a few times already, the damn Sean Spears entrance, the chairman's entrance. Every time I'm like, it's just him. It's just that. I get caught every single time. He makes it work, and he catches me off guard every time.
It's, to me, it's still one of the best entrances.
Oh, I don't disagree.
Or arguably, like, the best entrance in AEW right now. It sets a different tone, and they've really, you know, for a lot of these guys that have jumped from WWE now to AEW, like, you totally forget about their past characters that they were. Like, you forget about the Perfect 10. He's now Sean Spears, the chairman. Tully Blanchard adds a lot to this character, and now he seems to be, like, just the pure hitman type character for the old generation, as he keeps wearing that no garbage wrestling shirt, and obviously pretty much for this feud with Joey Janela, if you can even call it a feud, as they set that up, as we talked about on Wednesday on our post Dynamite show. Like, they set this up on AEW Dark that really not a lot of people knew about. So they needed maybe a little bit more, or could have thrown more of that angle up on the AEW Dynamite episode last week, because this came out of really nowhere. It was kind of in a filler spot. Nonetheless, they're still trying to repackage and rebuild up Sean Spears, and I think so far so good.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there's a few innovative spots. Well, innovative. For me, at least, because everything has been done or been seen before, but if it was in a gymnasium with 200 people and no cameras and no TV, it's hard to know if it happened before. A few spots that I like in this one, when Sean Spears attached Joey Janela's hair with the tag rope, and then at the end when he strips himself, able to get himself free, there's still some hair on the tag rope. Yeah, that's the first of a few cringeworthy moments during this show.
I mean, no, it was an innovative spot. I mean, using someone's hair to tie themselves up, I thought was unique. And, you know, Janela's usually someone that thinks outside the box for not only his offense, but to help his opponents get some extra heat on themselves and add to the match. And I thought this worked out well. I mean, Sean Spears obviously came away the victor in this match, and The only thing that concerns me is Joey Janela has proven himself to be an excellent talent for AEW, but I really don't know what the direction is they're going with him because, you know, he's lost now twice to Kenny Omega, now a match to Sean Spears. Like, I just don't want some of these hot indie prospects or indie guys coming into AEW and now kind of just be treated as, you know, jobbers or fodder. I don't think they look at Joey Janela that way, but I think there's something more that can be done with this Joey Janela character than him in a random out of nowhere feud with Sean Spears when he's got a lot of talent, a lot of personality, and give that guy a microphone. He's beyond entertaining.
Well, we know Joey Janela has a background of very hardcore wrestling, right? If you watch the main event and looked at John Moxley, well, Joey Janela is that and sometimes 10 times that. So Joey Janela could have a crazy, crazy like mindset. And maybe that's the storyline they're going with. He's been wrestling more tactical wrestling than hardcore wrestling since being on TV the last few weeks. So maybe they want to break him down and he's going to have a mental breakdown where he's going to start really going in a dark place and become the Joey Janela that we see in shows that he organizes over the last few years.
Yeah, we shall see. I mean, he is an asset in that aspect as well of, you know, scouting talent and finding top guys that can, you know, come right from the indies to AEW. He does have his finger on the pulse on that. That is a big aspect. But I think him personally, when you see him on screen right now, like, for an audience that isn't used to or doesn't even know much about Joey Janela's background, he just looks like a big geek, you know, week in and week out. Like, he now has really cooled off. And in this feud, I thought, or whatever, between Sean Spears and Joey Janela, I thought could have had a couple more weeks build and maybe a big match for, you know, a blow off on AEW Dynamite. I don't know if we needed it on the pay-per-view here.
That's true.
It really was just a big bridge from one big match to another, and I felt they just kind of rushed this program.
When you look at the entirety of the pay-per-view with hindsight, you take out that 20-some minute of Sean Spears and Joey Janela, the pay-per-view stays the same, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't affect it positively or negatively. So maybe at the end of the day, it would have been better off left off and given a better spotlight. But it's easy to say with hindsight, and I think the main event maybe went a bit further than expected than maybe other parts of it. And then when you start adding the video packages and the angles throughout the show, you find yourself with a almost 4-hour show. So I get your point and I totally agree. I did like the spike pile driver aided by Tully on the outside. That was beautiful. And the C4 Death Valley driver for the 1-2-3 Sean Spears, like Jason mentioned, with the victory. Now time for, did I miss anything? I think I actually did miss something here. Yes, interviewed backstage, Kip Sabian. Sabian said he joined the company of TH2 because everyone had his own clique and he needed to stand by him. So just continuing the beginning of, I guess, factions or teams making themselves known. And now we know that Penelope Ford will actually be the valet of Kip Sabian.
Which I'm fine with because they've really transformed Kip Sabian from like kind of a top-notch, excellent European talent to this bad boy, badass. You know, he had the toothpick in his mouth. He had the aviator shades on. And then you bring in Penelope Ford and she adds a different mystique to him right now. And for Penelope Ford as well, this is a step in the positive direction. Is she's only had a couple matches on AEW Dark where she's been on the losing end. They've been tag matches. But I think Penelope Ford can be a character that can be really used to have her separate herself in this women's division. She's, you know, got that ego kind of type of thing going on for her that, you know, she's this high-end, rough kind of bad girl, to say the least. And now she's with Kip Sabian, who I believe that is her actual boyfriend. So may as well pair them up and maybe that's a feud that we can see down the line of Kip Sabian now and Joey Janela, because they did cut right back to Janela as he was walking down the ramp back to the locker room afterwards. And, I mean, there is some real-life history between Joey Janela and Penelope Ford. So maybe that's a program that we can see get set up in the near future.
Yeah, I heard it. Remember, like, last year, listening to Wrestling Observer Radio and hearing about it, and I was, yeah, you rang me a bell. That's true. And then we go to the tag team title, three-way dance, SCU, Lucha Brothers, and Private Party. Now it all makes sense. I should have known. Should have known that Private Party were in this match to take the pin.
Yeah, I think that's also what you need. You got to keep the Lucha Bros strong. Private Party, though, you know, from getting that win a couple weeks ago against the Young Bucks, and then they had that killer match against the Lucha Bros, it kind of are dipping down. This is still a really solid tag team in AEW and a young up-and-coming team. But yeah, they were definitely here to take the pin. And, you know, this was, you know, a fine match. I don't think it was anything blow away, but I think you'd want for your next pay-per-view to have a one-on-one or just a basic tag match. You don't want to have an extra team. You got to set yourself up and set this division to mean something, especially for the tag teams that are in it. Like, there's a lot of depth in here. There's a lot of skilled teams, and I think there can be some fun matchmaking to be made. But obviously, they're trying to keep the Lucha Bros strong for when they can get the AEW Tag Team Championships around their waist.
No, I absolutely agree, and I'm going to get to my first, probably maybe my only rant of the night in a second. It relates to the letting things play out in a normal fashion and not rushing things, you understand. But I want to mention the Doomsday Dropkick by the Lucha Brothers and how on Quinn and how spectacular that is conveyed on TV, and that just looks awesome and looks like the guy's never going to get up. That's awesome. But Scorpio Sky has maybe the best or the second best dropkick I've seen in decades. Oh, the elevator. Mind blowing.
It's a fantastic dropkick, and I can't say enough good things about Scorpio Sky and, you know, his placement right now in AEW. This is a guy that you just feel is going to be a star for AEW. I mean, we've been saying this week in and week out when we see Scorpio Sky appear on AEW Dynamite. This guy's just fantastic, and I'm so happy to see his career heading in this positive and, you know, get a big shine on right now.
Now, of course, SCU retains. The Lucha Brothers were already all outside, and the SCU beat, of course, Quinn of Private Party. But then the lights go out for, what, the third time of the night? But the lights go out. Oh, and Pentagon Tres appears. And then, oh, Pentagon Jr. is there looking at him. He's not sure. They're both doing the Zero Mielo at the same time, like in the mirror. Pentagon is going for what seems to be a hug. Pentagon Tres is not going for a hug. And it turns out that it's the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels, coming out of injury. It was supposed to be 6 weeks. Well, I guess it was. But I don't know about you, Jason, but for me, I thought the pop that Chris Daniels got was minimal. The reaction wasn't that amazing. It was like, oh yeah, he was injured by them and now he's coming to get his vengeance. But I thought that you needed to let that wait a little bit more. I think you needed to make Chris Daniels forgotten a little bit more. It's like, oh yeah, we saw him a few weeks ago and now he was injured and he's back. The pop, the surprise, the shock factor, and when you make a reveal of a mask, you kind of, I don't know, it was a bit anticlimactic for me, I guess.
Well, I think thing is, every time the lights go down for anything going on in AEW, they expect a big reveal, a big name, someone we weren't expecting to show up. And, you know, once in a while, there is going to be disappointment. It can't be, you know, a hot free agent or someone, because right now, when you look at the wrestling landscape, there's a lot of talent that are, if they're free agents, they're right now currently negotiating, but for the majority, everyone's locked up wrestling for some other promotion. It's whether they're in AEW or your WWE, your Impact Wrestlings, or your New Japan Pro Wrestlings right now. So yeah, I can see why there's disappointment, and I get where you're coming from. But I think for me, what I did notice for the little things is when Daniels took off the Pentagon mask, he had the old Fallen Angel paint on his face. And the last time he had that, he was working a heel character in TNA. Maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way, but
no, I saw that too.
I could see Daniels turning on Scorpio Sky, because Daniels could be like, this is my moment. I was supposed to be in the team. If I didn't get jumped by the Lucha Bros, you know, it would have been me and Kazarian that won this. He's a little bit jealous of the success that Scorpio Sky happens. And, Like, I don't think you want to break up a team so fast right now, especially ones that is a faction that are wearing your tag team championship belts. But I think that's the direction we could see, where it's Daniels and Scorpio Sky, you know, being in a feud, because it just feels evidently and in the near future that Scorpio Sky is going to get a singles push.
I had the same feeling. I was wondering if it was not going to happen tonight.
When I don't think it will. I think that this is a promotion that will build some things up for a while.
But when I saw Frankie Kazarian get onto the ropes and then pointing at the Lucha Bros and then, yeah, let's finish this tonight. Just the visual, you really want to know what that visual reminded me of, and you're probably going to agree after that. And even the way that Daniels was dressed, it was Seth Rollins attacking Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns and turning on the Shield, right? So it kind of had that visual. So I was like, who are we going to get? No, okay, it's just one of the seeds planted. But you're right, the face paint on Chris Daniels, it was his Fallen Angel character before. Maybe after this whole thing, maybe he's going to go too far. Maybe something's going to happen. He's going to turn on Scorpio Sky or on Frankie Kazarian as well. But at least it's good to know. And it plants the seeds for something else as well, because we saw the reaction of Pentagon. So there is other Pentagon existing in the world. What if another day someone actually comes and it's an actual Pentagon that put this out in the AEW universe as well, right? That put the possibility of another Pentagon. Maybe there's another Phoenix. I kind of don't dislike this idea at all. I kind of like it.
Yeah, well, the first thing I thought of, like, when they were doing the Sierra Miero, like it looking in a mirror, was this is Doink the Clown at WrestleMania 9, where we saw the fake Doink come in when Crush was knocked out at WrestleMania 9, but I don't think we'll go there with that kind of thing. It is something you could do, because that's a character that can be on that kind of cool, funky, like Undertaker versus Undertaker thing. But this is the second person we've seen dressed up as Pentagon. We saw Chris Jericho back at All In a couple year ago do that when Kenny Omega was wrestling Pentagon. And then now we just see that with Daniels. So it is a character that I guess you could have someone pretend to be in. Hopefully we don't see it too much, because I think Pentagon's such a unique, cool character to do. But I would definitely expect to see the Lucha Bros add another bro, so we can have a six-man tag to settle this feud that these two teams have had.
That would be probably something exciting and amazing to see. Let's move to Riho Emi Sakura for the AEW Women's Champion. And before we talk about the match, let's do the All Elite Review Show Math of the Night, the math segment. 268 times Riho and Emi Sakura fought against each other. 32 times were in singles matches. 17 win for Sakura, 15 defeat for Sakura. And 6 title matches between the two. And before tonight, 3 wins, 3 losses for each in a 13 years span. That's a lot of matches between the two.
Definitely a lot of matches, but when you're Emi Sakura and you've been training Riho all for how long she's been being trained, I mean, that does show how much you enjoy working with and helping get her to be better. But yeah, this is the first time they had a singles match here in AEW. And what I thought added to this match is, as we just mentioned a couple moments ago, is how this division is, you know, the one, I guess, you know, department in AEW that hasn't really caught on as much. I think when you looked and they cut to like Emi Sakurai before they did the ring introduction, like, she was getting emotional about how much this match really meant to her, like almost crying before she went out and waved to the crowd as she was getting introduced by Justin Roberts. And I just thought, you know what, that emotion really added a lot to how important this title means to her, but how important like this division can be. And it just added that extra bit of reality to this match and made me a little bit more invested than I was going into this match.
No, I absolutely agree, and I like the ebb and flow of this match. Every AEW singles title match is always 60-minute time limit. I really liked a few of the moves here. Of course, the javelin foot stomp from Sakura, from Hiro on Sakura. I really enjoyed it. I felt the crowd was silent for most of this match, and I thought it was a shame because Riho deserved better and Sakura deserved better. And you remember earlier in the show, Jason, we were talking about planting seeds in the short history of AEW Dynamite. Just last Wednesday, we saw Riho being pinned by Sakura using the Magistral type of roll-around cradle. And we saw twice in the lead up to the end of this match. One missed one, and then she got it right. She got it correctly. But Riho made her homework since Wednesday, countered it, and eventually got the W. Little seeds planting and little thing that you saw before. Oh, it's happening again. And last time she did it, it made her win, and no evolution of the storyline. I like this. It's details, but it's details that actually add up to become important and makes a difference during the watchability of these matches.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought as well, just the build up to that finish was just so well done. And just you could see how much these two know each other from obviously, you know, being trained by one another and having those countless matches, and just how flawless and perfect the execution was on the finish. And then Riho continues to retain. And I think that was the right call. This is a show I really didn't think you could be changing championships, especially some of these championships that are pretty much just brand new and established. Like, you can't be changing titles a couple months in, not even about a month in to the launch of AEW, really getting all that exposure that it's gotten right now. And, you know, Riho, something about her, I don't know what it is, but it's every time she's out there, she does catch the fans' attention, and she is quite an amazing performer. So her being the first AEW champion week in and week out, every time I see her, is being proved to be the right choice.
The underdog storyline is always popular. American movies is always the underdog at the end of the day who wins. And to me, there's also the imagery of seeing a 98 pounds woman being ragdolled across a squared circle and surviving at the end of the day and still winning. I don't know. I guess it's that storyline and the visuals too of just the likability of a Riho. There's no malice in these 98 pounds. When you look at her on TV, just look like pure emotion. And sometimes, like Kenny Omega was talking just before writing the video package before this match, it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be super long and like teacher versus student, the champion versus the challenger. But the roles and verses, as the champion is a student and the challenger is the teacher. Just that, nothing else you need. Got yourself a big storyline that everyone can understand. We all had someone that taught us in our life. I had someone that showed me how to podcast a long time ago. And the same thing turning around, and then eventually you find yourself working with those people, and eventually you find them having those people work for you or the way around. And it does bring a storyline that is easily accessible for people to understand, and you actually live vicariously to the result of this. And seeing a Riho 98 pound woman realizing her dream by being the champion and having a belt with gold that we all dream we could have, but that we 99.9% of us won't, and we live vicariously through Riho, maybe that's the idea, maybe that's why she got over so quickly.
I think it's to do with how she looks and her talent. And I mean, I think for this odd, this is a fan base, definitely talent it plays a big part, but she's got some sort of charisma as well that you just can't teach that. And she's definitely won these crowds over week in and week out. And I enjoy seeing her. I just think she's also been putting on interesting and entertaining and high quality matches. Like, we saw the Britt Baker match for the Women's Championship, her first title defense. And then we saw this match with Emi Sakura. She was in a tag match last week. You know, I just keep enjoying her in-ring work and her pushing, you know, these young Japanese, these Joshis on AEW Dynamite. I just wish we could get maybe a video package here and there to help explain, you know, their background and stuff, to let the North American audience become more accustomed to them.
Yep, absolutely. But at the end of the day, we did have a retain and still Riho the champion. Which leads us to the AEW Championship match. Cody versus Le Champion, Chris Jericho. 60-minute time limit. And if at the end of the 60 minutes, well, if it goes to 60 minutes, it's a draw, but there's three judges at ringside who are going to decide the victor. And no, it's not a card. It's not. It's basically who won, who won, if it comes to it. And it might in the future. But tonight, the three judges were Dean Malenko, Arn Anderson, and the great Muto, or KG Muto, depending of where you used to watch him in North America or in Japan. But I kind of really liked the presence of the three judges, which led to one of the moments that really made me crack up later on in this match.
Yeah, you know, they're going the old school NWA way of things with the judges if you need them. I mean, obviously, it was pretty cool to see, you know, Keiji Muto sitting beside Arn Anderson. They had some pretty cracking matches back in the late days of Jim Crockett's promotions. You know, I was always, it's always pretty cool to see that. And I think it's a unique concept where you'll be going Pride MMA style in the old days of the UFC where, you know, for, you don't have a scorecard to judge it. You just judge who you, the in particular judge thinks won the match, but wasn't a factor in tonight's main event or co-main event, I should say.
Yeah, co-main event, but for the title, Cody comes out with MJF, and of course, we realize now that okay, for I guess for title fights, but it wasn't the case for Riho, but I guess for this one, there was Cornerman, and of course, Cody would have loved to probably have his brother, Dustin, instead of MJF, but Dustin is still recovering from the radio fracture from his arm from the big hurt slamming a door on his arm. So MJF, the best friend of Cody, was accompanying Cody to the ring, and for Chris Jericho, accompanied by the big hurt, it has to be said, today, November 9th, is Chris Jericho's birthday, and a nice birthday chant of fuck your birthday from the crowd to Le Champion.
That's awesome. I didn't hear that. That's pretty great. But, I mean, these entrances were huge, and I think that was the big interesting thing of the storyline. It's like, well, Cody's going to have his best friend, MJF, come out since his brother can't be in his corner because he had his arm destroyed in the limo at the hands of Jake Hager a couple weeks ago. And then, of course, Chris Jericho had his second in his corner, the big hurt, Jake Hager. And that's where we went to start things off for our AEW championship match and a match that I was really looking forward to.
And, you know, we should have known, and I actually wrote it down. So you wanna here's my notes, okay, for you. I wrote, Cody comes out with MJF, exclamation, interrogation, exclamation point. Chris Jericho is wearing a scarf? Huh. Interesting. We'll see where that leads. It did give us a little bit of a window into the future, but the big spot in this one, of course, Cody, with the suicide dive, miss hit face first into the ramp. Was it a blade job? Was it hard way? Who cares? On the top of the right high, there was a big gash.
Definitely a big gash. And it seems like in all these big type matches that AEW has, that Cody's going to bleed. Whether it's a match with his brother. I mean, his brother Dustin bled worse in that match. But Cody bled as well. And, you know, It does look really good on Cody with the blonde hair, blood trickling off his face, and just how those colors kind of work off each other. And looked a lot like his dad back in the mid-80s for the Crockett's when he was in his feuds with the Nature Boy Ric Flair. I mean, that was an insane bump as well to take, because just the way Cody's spine kind of contorted when he went face first onto that huge stage, which we didn't talk about because we're used to those tunnel type things that AEW has for Dynamite. And, you know, at first I wasn't the biggest fan of those big stages because it always makes the promotion feel so secondary where you have that huge stage right to the ring. It, like when you just look back in history, the promotions that used it and the time capsule they were in, they were clearly a number two promotion. But, you know, it worked for AEW tonight. I just hope we don't see it all the time. I do like that tunnel type thing, those two entrances for the heels and the baby faces. But yeah, Cody got absolutely mangled. His body was contorted as he went and did that suicide dive that Chris Jericho moved out of the way of. And how about Cody? This guy was willing to take those big risks in these big matches. I totally respect him for that.
Oh, the big bumps, the big maneuvers. And one spot that I liked that is really not complicated at all, and it doesn't have to be dangerous or complicated. it just have to make sense in the mentality of, oh, we're watching two guys that hate each other have a fight. They know each other, kind of. They've been scouting each other, and having the Judas effect blocked by Cody, reversal into a crossroads, just that in a way was really nice to see. But Cody getting beat up, and he's in the Lion Tamer. It's called the Lion Tamer once again, I guess, because of they want to go with the attitude of Chris Jericho back when he was in WCW. They're using the Lion Tamer. Excalibur said it multiple times, Lion Tamer. But you know what one of the signs in the crowd said about this move? I guess it's a 2019 version of Chris Jericho because it's the walls of cholesterol.
Well, I mean, there were some big moments in this match before we got there. Like obviously Chris Jericho got in the face of one of the judges, Dean Malenko, which brought many flashbacks to Jericho and Malenko and their feud in WCW with armbar and good old Dino Machino there. So, I mean, that must have been fun for the both of them since Dean's been retired for about 10 plus years now. And then when Cody was getting the crap kicked out of him by Jericho and they're building that heat up and he went right into the face of Cody's mom. That was a pretty good spot. And then
Cody slapped him hard.
Yes. Cody's mom slaps Chris Jericho and then Cody kind of attacked Jericho from behind and Cody's mom then slapped Jericho in the face when he was down. That was pretty awesome.
And did you hear what she said to him?
Yeah, she dropped an F-bomb.
She dropped an F-bomb on pay-per-view.
She dropped a pretty big F-bomb. I was not expecting Dusty, Mrs. Runnels to come out like that.
Dusty would be proud. But no, there's a couple spots. You mentioned the Dean Malenko and Chris Jericho spot. That made me laugh so hard. And then I opened Twitter. It's like, they're arguing about the 1,005th hold. And then I laughed again. I'm like, yep. Yep. I wish, like, come on, Jericho had to drop like a roll of paper. Like, okay, done. Armbar number. It was just a beautiful callback. And you know, Excalibur mentioning it too. And that to me was beautiful, where Excalibur has the knowledge, long time knowledge enough, and knows the moment that stuck into people's history, like into their consciousness. To this day, there's gifts of Chris Jericho saying the word armbar and having a long list in his hands, right? So it's a moment that really caught people's attention in the history of professional wrestling in the last 20 years or so. So calling to it saying, oh, Chris Jericho, looking at Dean Malenko, reliving long feuds they have in the late 90s. Yeah, exactly. Don't hide from it. Go towards it. It makes us fans at least a little, it's rewarding for watching for three decades when you have a callback from something that you watched when it happened 30 years ago.
Well, hopefully it wasn't that long ago. But
I am getting old, but yes.
It was definitely a long time ago, not 30 years ago, thankfully. I would feel way, way older. But yeah, and that was pretty cool. But I thought this match told an excellent story. It felt like a big championship match, as I knew it would with the two combatants in here, and Chris Jericho and Cody Rhodes. But this felt so different than the typical matches we've seen from the other promotion in their big championship matches as of late. Like, this one was just excellent storytelling. And then we saw, you know, Jake Hager kept interfering here, that finally he got sent out of the ringside and had to go to the back. He didn't seem to care too much, but him being gone was a big factor. And then, you know, Jericho used the title belt and rammed it in Cody's head. And then, I think you mentioned this before, where Jericho was looking for the Judas effect and was just countered right into the crossroads. And that Royal Farms Arena in Baltimore exploded on that spot.
That near fall caught me. I thought Cody was going to win there. Even though I knew better and I knew that the title would not change hands, I guess, this still had me. And that's how good and the execution. And you know what I like too? And it's the same for the main event, but to a more extended lane, but letting the match breathe. Like, you don't have to start the match just like Young Buck style and boom, 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 boom. It's okay to have a few of those, but it's okay to have a match where you know the importance of a match is for the championship, it's for the title, for the money, for the belt. So you're a bit conservative. You want to overextend yourself and expose yourself to a counter too early, and there's work hold, and really had some paces in the ebb and flow in the match, and the work rate that I could use as an expression, or more the storyline of the match itself, wasn't with high spots, it was with the ebb and flow and the accumulation of pain on Cody, and the time that Jericho can cheat here and there and accumulate the momentum. So that's how I like the storyline of a match to be played sometimes too, and in a championship match it makes sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're letting things, as you say, breathe. They're building it up, and these are matches where they're using, you know, ring psychology to help build things up and get the fans invested, going very old school with, you know, a guy like Chris Jericho, who's now such a veteran now, what, 49 years old or something in that?
49 ballpark? Years old yesterday.
Yeah, 49 years old, and he's still at such a high level, and Cody was born into this business, and you know, you just play mind games with the fans here. You get them to invest. Like, you bought in on that Crossroads finish, and you just keep working this match and just getting fans invested and, you know, proving once again that storytelling and those aspects of professional wrestling are 10 times more important and more entertaining than, you know, a big high spot that you're going to forget about in 5 minutes.
No, absolutely. Now let's get to the juicy angle. As soon as I saw MJF to the bottom left of my screen, going in and out underneath the ring, looking for something, like, ah, there's something happening. There's something here. And then you're like, okay, Cody's just stuck in the lion's chamber. It's getting worse and worse, and there's no progression. He's not getting out of it. And then you see it in his hands. You see the white towel, and you're like, no, it's going there. They found a way to get out of this without Cody being pinned and without Jericho losing the championship. MJF throws the towel, then pleads to Cody Rhodes, saying, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make you lose, but you were in deep trouble. I didn't know what to do. You were in pain. I couldn't stand seeing you suffering like this in the middle of the ring. You're my best friend. I had to. And of course, Cody is not happy. He's like, I didn't quit. I didn't submit. I was all right. And then realizing it's okay, he had my best interest at heart, forgiving right now MJF. And MJF boots Cody Rhodes right in the balls. MJF heel turn.
Yeah. And, you know, going into this, people were like, we knew this turn would come, but did they need to do it tonight? And I think, you know, maybe did they rush it a little bit? Okay. But the way they executed that finish, where it was MJF that threw in the towel and screws Cody out of now never ever getting a chance to wrestle for the AEW championship, I think it adds a lot of storyline here. Obviously, this is the next program for both. And I mean, MJF's has just skyrocketed up. He's now top heel in the company right now. And I did love the finish as well, because we don't see the towel being thrown in finish pretty much at all in professional wrestling. Like, the last time I think it was memorably used was in like Survivor Series 94, when Bret Hart's parents, Stu and Helen, threw in the towel while Bret Hart was in the crossface chicken wing for like 8 minutes on Bob Backlund. And that was just so Owen could screw his brother out of the title, because he couldn't win it, so get someone else to represent anyways. So that's kind of where we're at right now, where MJF threw in the towel to screw Cody out of ever getting that opportunity. Now he wants to be the champion, and he gets himself right into that kind of area. Now, you mentioned the scarves that Jericho wore. I hope we don't see MJF enter into the Inner Circle. I think the Inner Circle is a group that doesn't need to add members like the NWO did, because that became a problem. Like, maybe add some members, but not right away. I think MJF's big enough as he is right now, where he doesn't need another group or anyone. He can hang out and do his own thing, and that feud is just going to be sensational when we get to it.
It's headlining the January pay-per-view. It's Cody versus MJF. The heat that guy got.
Did they add a date for that January pay-per-view? I may have missed that.
17 or so, like in that area. Like a little less than 2 months. So somewhere in that area.
And 1 week after Impact has a pay-per-view to start 2020. January 12th is their next pay-per-view.
Well, It's like tonight, Impact had a pay-per-view on their Impact Plus. And didn't MLW have a pay-per-view tonight too? Like, why,
they
guys?
They had a TV taping.
Okay, TV taping. Okay, so that would make more sense. I just saw it pop up on my feed. I was like, what's with all this? Like, leave AEW with their own time. But no, so coming out of this, MJF, of course, walking on that ramp, and he gets hit with a big, big wave of liquid. We don't know if it's beer, water. It actually looked like water carefully, and the way it soaked into the blazer, as you can see, I wear a blazer tonight, and I got caught in the rain a few times covering a sporting event, and it did actually did look like water seeping into his suit. Now, the question is, was it a plant? Was it a fan throwing that soda or that water bottle? But the reaction is priceless, and that gif will be the new gif popular about AEW on social media, because the image of seeing that wave of water hitting MJF smack in the face is priceless.
I think it was definitely a plant, but they're out there trying to add just the outrage of it. And I don't know, like, this is a story I think maybe you could have helped build up a little bit more. I think everyone was really enjoying kind of the babyface stuff of MJF. But with some of the stuff they've been doing with him social media-wise, it's really tough for him to be Cody's best friend and just be an absolute dick on the side. Like, I guess you had to get to it sooner rather than later. And I thought, though, I'll say it again, the finish was unique and totally different and something no one was really expecting, how to work that, use that stipulation and make it have an impact where Cody never tapped, Cody never quit in this match. It was MJF throwing in the towel to screw him out of. Now he will never be in a championship title match anymore in AEW, at least for the time being. You know, this is wrestling and they'll find a way to work Cody back into that eventually.
Well, it's going to be a stip in another match eventually, and Cody will have to go through a gauntlet and beat a few people. Eventually, he'll get a shot probably. But I agree with you, and they kind of had no choice because you have to find a path for Cody after this. Jericho's going to go on his own path. He's going to have new contenders as a champion. They're going to keep coming. That's the thing with a win and loss record. You're not shy of contenders if you book them properly. The thing is, for Cody, you needed to find something hot enough to keep his momentum as one of the top baby faces of the company. And I think they found the best way to do that. And maybe they had to pull the trigger a bit earlier than anticipated for the MGF. But it's the only way to not only finish one feud, start another, but deflect the Cody hatred from the inner circle towards MGF so the inner circle continues and moving on to a new target. And that would make sense. And I agree with you. I truly hope that MJF doesn't join the inner circle, because it's two different directions. I see MJF versus Cody on one side and the inner circle going either towards Pac, as if he's the new number one contender, it'll be Pac versus the inner circle or something similar. But there's going to be a transition in the top feud for the championship and the top feud for the top babyface in the company.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's move to the main event of tonight's show. Moxley Omega lights out, unsanctioned match. You know that that little nervy feeling and you're not sure, you had the edge of your seat. You're like, are they okay? Is his arm broken? Is he okay? He's bleeding from everywhere. Yeah, it was a long time, but I had it tonight for about an hour.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was some pretty intense stuff they did in this match, and I liked how they set it up, basically saying that the lights will go off and that when they come up that the AEW will be different and this is unsanctioned, and setting up the point that like this match won't count on their win-loss record right now. So we knew we were going to get something special. We knew this was going to be the main event. We knew they were going to really go all out. This is a Jon Moxley element match, but once again, they've been putting Kenny Omega in these situations here to amp him up. He had a lights out match with Joey Janela on the second or third episode of AEW Dark. Can't remember off the top of my head, but that was an excellent match. And once again, we will now see, we now saw this match, and boy, did they pull out all the stops.
Yeah, from a Phoenix Splash straight on wood. That was hardcore. Pile of broken glass. That was pretty hardcore. What else? Oh yeah, a plank of board with mousetraps on it. That's just not talking about the broom with barbed wire and the bat with barbed wire. And some of those bats and broom were real barbed wires, because we saw Kenny Omega do a crusher on John Moxley. And when he landed after doing his bulldog crusher, he actually touched his broom a little bit with his hand and then started bleeding. The back of the head of Moxley, when he got hit a few times with the broom, just started spewing blood like crazy. This was a tame CZW match, but for AEW, it was the craziest hardcore match we've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, we also saw that big bed of barbed wire where we saw Moxley suplex Kenny Omega onto that. And, you know, this was, I think, a good main event. And, you know, finally these two get to have their blow off here. Moxley eventually came away the winner. Thanks to, you know, just pretty much what pile driving. I believe it was Kenny Omega under that board. Like, he ripped up the ring skirt or the ring apron, cut off the ring skirts and took off the padding. It was just the board of wood that Kenny Omega went head first on, thanks to that pile driver from John Moxley. But, like, I don't know. I've seen some people say they didn't really like this match. And I can see that. Look, hardcore wrestling is for everyone. And, you know, hardcore wrestling can be done really good. So it can be maybe done over the top. And this was a pretty violent match for a mainstream wrestling company to have, with the amount of, like, they went right to the barbed wire. We've seen broken glass be used before. And it's almost like, my thing is, do you want to put one of your, I think it added a different element to Kenny Omega. But Kenny Omega is also one of your top guys in this company. And arguably pound for pound, probably your best pure wrestler. And he's out here on your first pay-per-view since TV in a plunder garbage match. Like, well, that kind of, I think, hurts a bit for me. And I've seen some negative reaction to this match. And I get that. I think, though, for me it was, I guess, as well, adding the different element to Kenny Omega, that he can be in these matches.
No, you're absolutely right. And this match was supposed to take place at All Out, and because of the injury, the staph infection or something similar to that for John Moxley, they had to postpone the match. So it did derail the plan, and maybe that explains the weird limbo Kenny Omega has been on for the last couple of weeks. He doesn't have a program up to the level that we imagine Kenny Omega having a program with AEW when it first starts, right? We didn't anticipate this, but I think it has to do with the injury of John Moxley that did postpone the plans for All Out. They felt like they needed the resolution to that feud first, because, of course, it happened on Double or Nothing when John Moxley made his first apparition for AEW and attacked Kenny Omega and Dirty Deeds on the giant casino token. That's where this feud started. So they needed a resolution. This was a long match. We're not going to go through all the spots. You mentioned a drop to hold. To me, I really liked it. The drop to hold on the barbed wire, on the broom, this bad shot of Moxley on Kenny Omega, and you see the blood coming out. I really enjoyed it. I thought that the spider web of barbed wire was a bit too much, and the way they tried to make a storyline where he's convincing the Bucks to go get it for him. It's the only way I can beat him. It's the only way I can beat him. Of course, we all knew. When I saw that happen, I was like, he's the guy setting the table that, you know, going to go through the table, right? That's exactly what happened. We knew he was going to take the brunt of that fall through the spider web. But all in all, they worked really hard. I hope that they're not too injured, but I have a feeling that they're probably not 100%, just because some of the falls that Kenny Omega took in this one, and it's not the one you would think. To me, he probably got injured in that lariat tilt-a-whirl that he landed awkwardly on his neck and on his shoulder. And when Moxley front twisted suplexed him on the mousetraps, he landed on his neck and shoulder. That had to hurt.
Yeah, that one was nasty. The only spot in these matches that I don't like are the ones where they put glass in your mouth. And, like, unless you do the move right away where you hit him with a punch or something, what have you, like, okay. But Kenny Omega put the glass in Moxley's mouth, and then Moxley, he tried to, like, hit that running quick German suplex. Moxley blocked it and then hit a move on Omega, like, dropping him into the glass. Like, why wouldn't you just spit the glass out? Like, logically, that's, like, why would you keep that in your mouth for so long? And then eventually a V trigger went to John Moxley's mouth. So his mouth's all cut up. So I don't know. Some of it was a little over the top and, you know, unbelievable that we couldn't buy into. But, like, they did work their ass off. They did put themselves in some insane situations. I think more they're trying to, I guess, get across the unhinged character here of Kenny Omega from some of the stuff we've seen on Being the Elite to now translating to In the Ring. And it seems like there's some sort of tension going on between Kenny Omega and the rest of the Elite with Hangman Adam Page and the Young Bucks. So we'll see if maybe we get a feud there between Page and Omega. Who knows? But, you know, Moxley got the win. It doesn't count to his record, but, you know, when you look at the end of the show, it feels like the next logical program is Jericho and Moxley.
That's true. And that could happen. You never know. We'll see in the next future. Of course, we'll be back Wednesday with the AEW Dynamite review after the live show on TNT and TSN. You can listen to Jason and I review it every Wednesday on our social media at All Elite Review on Twitter. Jason, if you had to look back at this entire pay-per-view and tell us what your match of the night is, what would it be?
I'd say definitely the AEW Championship match, I thought. Just the storytelling, and they really got the crowd invested a lot. There's a big angle at the end, and I just thought this was what pro wrestling is so great at, and investing people and the fan base in. That to me was my match of the night.
I'm going to surprise a lot of people. My match of the night is the main event, Moxley and Omega. For many reasons, I don't necessarily agree with everything that happened. I think it's a bit unfortunate that Omega loses again, but I think it's all part of a bigger storyline, all part of a bigger arc, and it's all part of the redemption story. And Cody's a top babyface for now. And if you look at the history of North American wrestling over the last few years, Kenny Omega is popular, is amazing, is big, especially in Japan. His redemption storyline, his rise hasn't been told here yet. And he's the youngest one of that crop. If you look at the top baby faces of AEW and the potential, he's the one you can do that long arc of the fall, the rock bottom, the redemption, reinvention, the climb to the top, and finally the big crowning moment with the confetti and the streamers on a pay-per-view Thanksgiving next year, right? So that might be the storyline when you look at Kenny Omega and the Elite. The Elite's not going to last forever. It's going to be a storyline purpose as well. Who's going to be the first one to get out? It might all start with the downward spiral that Kenny Omega seems to be on. How far in the depth of hell will he have to go to find the way back to the top? That might be what you do with Kenny Omega for the next 18 months.
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of intrigue that's going on right now with Omega. I think, you know, he loses, but he was in an element of that he's not used to with these extreme hardcore matches. Only had really about two of them now. And, like, for the storyline-wise, this doesn't affect their win-loss record. So his win-loss record is intact, even though he lost tonight. But, you know, I think the big thing is, I guess, for one of the complaints we've heard about AEW is that Kenny Omega hasn't really been featured as a way we thought he would be. Maybe this now is the chance where he can, you know, break out after this feud being over. And there's plenty of options out there for him to be feuding with. And it seems like they're building some sort of character up where they're going to transition some of the stuff we've seen from him on Being the Elite to AEW Dynamite and or the pay-per-views now.
Which would make a lot of sense. On that note, we've been talking about this pay-per-view for an hour and 10 minutes. It was a pleasure, Jason. Always a pleasure talking to you with wrestling. And I already can't wait for Wednesday for AEW Dynamite.
Yeah, I think the rating, this is a big week because we've seen NXT kind of last week really grow in the ratings. Not too far off. It was the closest we've seen. Is next week maybe going to be the point where NXT can take over because they've been doing a pretty interesting job on WWE TV building up the Survivor Series with this NXT invasion, but it's the first post-pay-per-view episode of Dynamite, so we'll see how the intrigue was in the pay-per-view and the following up of the story arcs that continue here for Dynamite. So this is a big week in the Wednesday Night Wars.
And we'll be right back Wednesday after All Elite Wrestling Dynamite to talk about it on All Elite Review Show. You can follow Jason on social media on Twitter at JHagHome1. You can follow myself at Kev Laramie and this show at All Elite Review Show, live after every AEW Dynamite on our Twitter feed and podcasts available everywhere you get your podcasts, also on our YouTube and Facebook page. If you'd like to give us a comment, what you thought about AEW Dynamite, what do you think about the pay-per-view, Full Gear, what do you think so far about AEW in general, sportspodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You like what we do, you want to support us financially, you can always do so at Sports Podcasting Network's Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. But until Wednesday, for Jason, I'm Kevin. We wish you a great wrestling.